Right, this is the Cool Shit Podcast. Each week we round up the latest cool shit, helping us think different and keep inspired. What makes it in, what gets left out, and what gets challenged. Is it cool, is it shit?
Or does it cross the magic threshold and come bona fide, certified cool shit?
Welcome to the editors meeting.
Hello, Gareth's not here, so I'm filling in his big shoes, Succession reference, if anyone got that, of being host. And today we've got our two lovely ladies. We've got Lucy, the jumpsuit queen.
Well, thanks, Gina.
How are you?
I'm very well. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Are you happy to be back on the pod?
I am, especially as you're hosting.
Thanks. Lucy's such a busy girl, so we should feel very thankful that she's made the time to be on here.
Oh, stop it.
And we've also got Alicia, quite a consistent member of the podcast that tends to bring quite bad stories.
Thanks.
That's okay. I hope you've got something good today.
I wouldn't get your hopes up.
Confident. And James, the usual editor-in-chief, aka the little chef of the Cool Shit Podcast. How are you, James?
I'm good. I'm delighted to be here with all you lovely ladies.
This is a great start, guys.
It's a great start. So much flattery. How's your week been?
Been all right.
How was last night?
Actually, no, I'll tell you what. I think I almost got food poisoning, but I managed to just about avoid it.
Okay.
So that's good.
I was actually inquiring about last night.
Last night was good.
Why don't you fill us all in?
I did stand up and I won a pint for being well funny.
Did you actually?
Yeah.
Well, aside from that, how's the week been for stories? What have you got for us?
Yeah, it's been all right, actually. Okay. It's quite kind of actual ad heavy for a change.
Which is nice.
There's a couple where I'm not really entirely sure what exactly I think about them. So hopefully you lovely ladies will help me work out what I think.
Yeah, we're not just pretty faces. We can give our opinions and everything.
Exactly.
Did you know that?
Exactly.
Okay, what are we starting with then?
I think it's easy to get kind of swept up in the sort of London-centric bubble. So we've looked a bit further afield for this one, all the way to lovely Argentina.
Oh,
do you know
cool.
it? I partly included this because I think I quite like it, but I feel like I shouldn't. So basically, Gatorade have released this 3-minute video telling the story of a young fella who gets his heart broken and is forced to build himself back up with the help of Gatorade. Have you all seen it?
We
I
have.
Know that you have
yes.
because yeah. I've just watched you watch it because
yeah.
you didn't
James
watch it before the podcast.
James
you
made us watch it right before recording.
Yeah. I like it because I feel like this is the kind of thing you would have hated, I would have thought. The production value is great and it's a great piece of film. But I think James this time last year would have looked at that and said it's just another brand trying to sell me something using emotion.
Yeah.
I feel like you're changing your tune a bit.
What's happened to you, James? Have I become all sentimental and soft in my old age? Yeah. Because it's definitely cheesy and sentimental, but I think it's different to other similar piece of content that you see in this sector. It follows like the same beats as that kind of overcoming adversity, going through challenges. But normally that's a boxer who's looking pretty sweating, having to get through that challenge.
Yeah, this is more real.
Exactly. A lot of it's based on that grind to be like an elite athlete, whereas this is based in something that's a raw emotion that I think more people can relate to who aren't looking to be elite athletes. Mm-hmm. But it kind of shows like the restorative effects of like exercise, for example, not to get you to be an elite athlete, but just to get to a basic baseline of not being utterly miserable.
And it's got moments of like slightly mundane, funny elements of human life. The point of this being that sport has the ability to help you through challenges in your life, or maybe personal moments in your life, and helps you kind of overcome them, and Gatorade fuels you to be able to undertake these sports performance challenges. But they also have this kind of charades moment in there as well, which is really nice. I think they've got nice little comedic moments, which I think makes it a bit more engaging.
It's quite relatable, I think.
Yeah.
Me and Alicia were watching it and we were like, oh, this is so sad. Like,
I mean, you were both laughing quite a lot as you were watching.
It was this poor man.
Wait, hang on, guys. James, is this you? Is this why you resonate so much with it?
I think it
because
might be, yeah.
And Gatorade helped you get back to fitness.
They lost 3 stone from drinking Gatorade. Pretty much. That was part of the reason why I bought it, because I was curious. It's obviously quite male orientated because it's talking about particularly a male's perspective on heartbreak. And I thought, oh yeah, I get that. But that was why I was wondering if the ladies in the room did.
Like,
as well.
He's like zooming in on her Instagram picture and things like that. These are just everyday things of life when you're heartbroken or you're dating someone and they're ghosting.
I think it's very clever. I like it.
I thought it was going to go in a different direction. So when I first saw it, I was like, oh, okay, well, Gatorade helps you replenish like the salts that you lost. So I thought it was just going to be a guy like crying.
Real scientific.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah, no, but I thought it was just to
replenish his basic electrolytes.
Yeah, no, because he's really sad. No, he's depressed and he's sad, and so he's just crying through his heartbreak. And then, replenish those salts by drinking some Gatorade.
Yeah, but I think...
That's another meaning,
so
I think. You've interpreted it in a very weird way.
We all deal with things in different ways.
That's true. You need your electrolytes.
But the fact it's quite long as well.
It is long. It's a piece of film. I'll tell you what, that's the only thing that kind of ruins it for me, is the bit of the Gatorade at the end when he's running is when I suddenly...
Because like, you're kind of invested in it as like... As an actual
story, you almost feel slightly disappointed in the end because you realise, like, oh God, it is an ad, because
I think that's what I quite like about it. I think it's quite a subtle piece, like the narrative is quite subtle, but I think the Gatorade moments are quite obvious. I'm reading into this way too much now. I almost feel like it's not a spoof, but there's an element of
I don't think it's a bad thing that it takes you out of your ad's head for a moment, then puts you back into it. Because we're not talking about this, but there's a Burger King advert. We're going to talk about a Burger King advert, and it's a really great piece of video. It's like a load of kids questioning the crazy world we live in, and it's a great script. But the point is that kind of, the world is mad, and what's one of the maddest things is that Burger King's plant-based range tastes exactly like meat. And like with that, it didn't bring it back to the product enough for me. It didn't quite work. Yeah. Whereas with this, it kind of does, because I guess what they're doing, they're kind of selling exercise as a concept, and then from that kind of attaching themselves to it, rather than just talking about the pure scientific shit that
a 20 to 30 second Lucozade advert would do, right? They've kind of gone completely the other way.
I think I would say though
at the very end though, when there is like a little bit of like hope, like, oh, this girl that's helping him is like, oh, maybe that's
after she
the
smacks
next,
him
your next love, didn't need that.
He doesn't need a woman to. He's sad.
Like, it's like a full circle.
If he had a woman, he wouldn't need Gatorade.
Yeah.
That's the key point.
But I'll tell you the other thing, because you mentioned like the like stalking. Like, I think it's quite bold to show what could be potentially fairly toxic behaviours, like stalking an ex to social media or leaving like some regrettable voicemails. And that's why I think it's just quite an honest representation of the sort of the mad shit that you do when you're actually heartbroken. I think it would have been safer for them not to go down that route. So I respect the fact that they did.
Now we all know what to do when we're feeling a bit sad. We'll go
drink a Gatorade.
Drink Gatorade and exercise. Although I don't think anything will really lead me to exercising. I'm not a massive fan. But I do like Sabbat, and I'm glad that he found hope through exercise.
Me too. Isn't that a lovely start to the podcast?
No, it really was. It's quite a positive start.
Yeah.
Maybe not so positive. What's your next story? I'm saying that because we don't know how we're going to react to it or respond to it.
Okay, that's a lot of pressure.
That's a very loaded question.
I don't want to tell you now. Actually, I partly brought this because I had a sneaking suspicion, which was confirmed just before the podcast, that I thought, I bet Lucy fucking loves David Attenborough. And it turns out, not only does she love David Attenborough, she wants to be David Attenborough.
Yeah, I do. I think he needs to be wrapped in bubble wrap and protected at all costs.
He's quite sweet.
But the actual story is not just David Attenborough's great, innit? So to promote the new series of Lil David's Prehistoric Planet show, Apple TV have worked with David Popper, a natural artist, which apparently is a real thing, to create gigantic images of dinosaurs in real landscapes using natural materials that can only be viewed by drone.
Do you know what? That was one of my first questions, which you've now answered, but I was going to say, what materials is he using? Because surely spray painting and painting...
That would have been some dodgy promotion.
It would have been.
It's like earth pigments, ground shells, charcoal, and local chalk.
That's quite cool.
Not just any chalk as well, but local chalk.
Where's he doing these murals, and what are they of?
I can tell you, he did one in...
Well, you guys have practiced this, haven't you?
No, we're just naturals, Lucy.
He did one in the US, one in England, and one in Finland, and I cannot be any more specific than that. What was the second part of your question?
What are these pictures of?
Dinosaurs. I can tell you.
Go on.
There's a Tyrannosaurus Rex. That's a good one, isn't it? A Triceratops. And then, this looks Hungarian. Hatzegopteryx.
Very good, James.
I know that. Yeah.
My favourite.
Okay. So I don't understand how this is actually promoting the show, though, because I'm not going to think, oh, let me go look at this giant dinosaur painting when I'm flying over Finland. Oh, and then think, let me watch season two of Prehistoric Planet.
Sure, I don't think it's just designed for the people who happen to be on the flight path over where these are. For the content, for the video that we just watched, for the promotion of it.
Brand awareness.
Brand awareness. And because that's
very close minded today.
Because that's I think they've thought, like, how can we make a load of noise? Yeah. And they've probably got a decent marketing budget, I imagine. And they just thought, let's go big.
Yeah, see something that we know people are going to watch it. It's called David Attenborough.
Well, I didn't even know the show. I didn't know the show was happening.
I
didn't know
it was new.
Exactly. So it's kind of worked in that sense. I didn't know it was happening. I didn't know it existed, firstly. And I didn't know that there had already been a season. I didn't know he was working with Apple TV. So based off of that alone,
you're the audience and it's worked. And it literally worked.
And I've been... I'm
actually writing a biography of David Attenborough, so I've known this for a while.
Do you know what? I'm not, and this is not going to be a popular opinion.
You don't like him.
I'm not sure I like David Attenborough.
I'm not fucking surprised. Yeah. Like, that fits your MO so perfectly. No,
and I'm aware.
You would dislike a man who is so wildly highly regarded by everyone else on the planet.
I think I'm just trying to be contrary, but it's all we need to say. I mean, the planet.
To be honest, if you told me you did like him, that together with the first piece of this podcast,
well,
I'd be
very
concerned.
That's not actually me.
I'd start worrying.
No, I like Gatorade, hate David Attenborough. I think the point is people are fascinated by dinosaurs.
Yeah.
Or
a cult following.
At least this person is.
Do you actually really like dinosaurs?
If I'm really. I am kind of.
You're fascinated by them?
For the sake of the podcast. Okay. I think part of the reason people are so interested is just because of the sheer size of them. They just seem too big to have ever existed on the same planet as us. So I think they've steered into that a little bit just
with
to kind
the
of,
giant mules.
I don't know, I rate the craft of it because I don't know, because obviously we can now view it when it's finished from the drone. I don't know how the fuck he was doing it when he was actually doing it, if he had the drone up there the whole time. So I think that alone deserves some credit.
Alicia, are you going to watch Prehistoric Planet season 2?
No.
Not a bit of you? You don't like nature shows?
No, it's not my vibe necessarily. Mm-hmm. But it looks really nice. Like, I like the idea of the natural, like, art using existing materials. There's an artist, I think his name is Andy Goldworthy, who does sort of, not of specific things, but will use like leaves and all of these other things and just like put things in nature. And they're like beautiful sculptures and stuff like that. That just sort of exist and, you know, eventually they'll sort of erode away or whatever.
That's quite cool.
So I do like the art of it. I mean, I think it worked. Obviously, I wouldn't have heard of this show otherwise, but not my vibe.
That makes
the show
us.
Itself, but you know.
It's more a logistical thing for me. I don't understand how I don't understand how he's managed to. I mean, it's very detailed. Yeah. T-Rex, I get. I've got no idea what the other
blob
one is.
Yeah, one of them is not. He's done a bad job with one, to be honest.
I actually can't work out what
the second
it is.
One.
But
no,
if you just look at the T-Rex, I feel like it's very detailed. How can he do that at that scale without seeing it? Does that make sense?
He must just have it.
Has he got a picture in his wallet?
Has he got a drone?
He's got a picture in his wallet.
Has he got a drone? It feels a bit picture by numbers to me. That's what that looks like, but it's not.
It probably is. They probably end up like doing little squares and stuff and then just working on each piece.
They do it like one bit at a time.
Yeah, I think it would have been cooler if they'd done it to scale of what they look like, how big they are.
I think they have.
Because then you could feel. There's no way that T-Rex is
that big. I disagree, because then I think it would be too small. Like, even though it would like be technically correct, I don't think it would have the same impact. It's definitely not to scale.
I think it's cool, but I'm not like fussed on it.
Yeah, it sounds like none of us are entirely blown away. Yeah.
Like, it looks nice, but...
Yeah, I mean, good for him. What's his name?
Yeah, that's kind of my main takeaway.
Good for David.
I thought I probably took him ages. He deserves some credit.
Yeah, they like have an interview with him, and he's got like paint all over his face. So he's really been like...
They definitely just put that there.
...on him before they filmed him. Yeah, I mean, he must be proud to be doing this for such a... big show.
It's impressive.
It is impressive.
It's impressive. Well,
so
well,
he gets
David.
To work with David Attenborough. Like, that's cool.
He probably didn't.
He didn't meet him.
But
actually, this is a fun fact. Do you know this? David Attenborough is frozen for 2/3 of every year.
No, he's not.
No, he's not, but he might be.
Lucy knew that wasn't true.
Actually, do you want an actual fact that I learned the other day? So I was listening to a podcast, and this guy was saying, if you wrote a 1,000-page book of all of, like, human history, then what's known as prehistory would make up the first 975 pages.
That's crazy.
It's great, isn't it? And the last, like, since AD, when Jesus didn't die, it's like that would make up, like, I think it was, like, the last, like, 7 or 8 pages, which is just a bit mad.
It makes
Roman Empire, that's forever ago, but it's literally literally nothing.
It's not really insignificant.
Yeah. So glad that you brought up the Roman Empire, James.
Thank you. Yeah.
I love being on this podcast.
Just for you. I didn't do it when you were here.
He's so smart.
I bloody tried. I said it to Gareth and he said, what? What's that?
Thanks for those stories, James.
Oh, my pleasure.
They're all right, yeah.
Thanks.
That's all right. You did your job. Alicia, what have you got for us? Let's try and beat your track record of your stories.
Just being bad.
I want to say off the bat that I have no confidence this is going to be any good.
Well, it's definitely not going to make the newsletter, but I think
thanks for bringing
it's interesting. No, I think it's interesting because whatever implications, blah, blah, blah. My story is about food because it tends to be about food. So there is a startup in the US that is using gene editing to make, they've made mustard greens more appetizing to consumers. So they are trying to help people eat like healthier salads and stuff. So they've basically rolled out a new type of green that is apparently genetically engineered to be less bitter.
They've debittered your regular mustard green.
It's a new vegetable.
No, so they've taken, it's the CRISPR, whatever that thing is. So like they're reorganizing the DNA.
So CRISPR is this like science thing that that can like modify stuff. So they're modifying this mustard green.
Well said,
So we're just making this simple for you guys, just so you guys can understand. Yeah,
because I obviously have a much, you know, but like a really in-depth understanding of the science behind it, but I'm not going to go into
it. Taking the DNA of the mustard greens and then editing it to like remove some of the bitter.
Not to sound like a fruit, you're stupid. What's a mustard green?
Like, oh, it's just like a leafy green.
Like a type of green.
Oh, right.
Like collard green sort of thing.
Yeah. They're using this technology to make the green less bitter so that people eat it more. Yeah. But also, why don't people just eat it?
So they're saying it's more nutritious than like iceberg or butter lettuce. So it's like making it more palatable to a wider audience. And then the implications of that is like making fruits more sweet.
Yep. I'll be honest. At face value, I'm like, with everything else going on in the world right now, is someone really putting money and investment into making something taste a bit different than it currently does? But if this is about the future of potentially changing or altering how things taste to people, could this move into, you know how people don't like cucumber because they have an actual... Have you heard that?
No.
I don't know.
I don't like cucumber. I know coriander.
Cucumber, it's very like coriander. Oh, yeah. Some people have a certain taste, which means that cucumber tastes like soap.
Not having it. They're just fussy eaters. They're pathetic. They need to grow up.
Could this inform change taste of how you taste food?
I don't know if it's how you taste the food. I think it's more flavor profiles of the food itself. There's always that conversation about how everyone talks about how they hate Brussels sprouts, but there's a thing where like it used to be more bitter, but then through cross-pollination, which is the old way things used to be done, they've taken the bitterness out of it, but that takes years and years and years. This one, when they took out the, you know, for the mustard greens, I think took about 4 years. So it's potentially taking something that maybe in the future, when resources become more scarce, for example, maybe we'll have an abundance of, I don't know, Brussels sprouts.
And mustard greens.
But they're going to be genetically modified.
You know, I'm going to make this easy for you. Bacon, butter.
This is now a recipe podcast.
A little bit of Brussels sprouts.
Makes everything taste better.
Yeah,
it does.
Yeah, no, sure. I love Brussels sprouts anyway.
Of course you do.
Yeah, but this is the thing.
Little bitter boy.
I'm a bitter boy. I'm a bitter little boy. I'm a bitter little boy.
I think it's cool because I'm reading another article on it, Alicia, and it's basically talking about how this is gene editing and it's speeding up a process that normally occurs naturally. So GMO foods, they use genes from other species, whereas this is showing that you can use the existing genes to change something as opposed to using other genes to change it.
Okay.
God, I'm a scientist.
My first reaction was I actually quite like it, but now it's I don't know, it feels like it's a very first world thing, isn't it? Just people go, oh, I don't like it, it's bitter.
No, it's not though, because it can be used like in wider crops and stuff.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Also getting like
you haven't said anything.
You know what I really like to take the soundbite from earlier where you said it's where they take genes and stuff and create other. I want to take that and just soundbite it.
Yeah, we can use that as an ad that can be to market the podcast. So many people want to listen
this
to
this week on Cool Shit.
I'm kind of interested in this because I say, for example, if you could make stinging nettles taste of butterscotch, then I'm kind of into it because then all of a sudden you've expanded the world's food supply. So in that sense, I think it's a good start. They're getting
it's
there.
It's just a startup. So put some money into it and let's get it everywhere. The other thing they were saying is they're not sure if people would be that keen to eat something that is genetically modified.
Everything is genetically modified.
Bit, yeah, but like, I guess it's more just in the
that's just not true.
Positioning of it.
Most things.
But
that's also not true.
I wouldn't mind, but...
No, I wouldn't mind either. Yeah. It's the first CRISPR edited food to hit the US. Yeah. So there could be more things to come. Would you eat it, James?
Yeah, I'll eat anything. That's the thing that I don't like about it. I feel like it's just pandering to people who are fussy, which I have no time for whatsoever.
We know.
So
there he is.
I'm back.
The little bit of Brussels sprout boy. Okay, well, thanks for that, Alicia. That actually wasn't your worst.
No, yeah. I'll tell you what. I mean, it wasn't great, but it might have been your best.
I think it was. It's better than it was the, what was it, Shake Shack's truffle menu.
Yeah, that was at least mildly interesting. Okay. So
Alicia set that expectation at the start. She knew it wasn't going to make it in, but she still brought it. So she can't be too offended that you said that. Lucy, last but not least.
So I usually start with, I don't know if this is something. And then it usually turns into something. But I don't know. So, Zach... Next Gen Creative Agency.
Which is where we work. For people that don't know.
Thanks to you. So Antiques Roadshow could be going a bit more Next Gen as well.
Mm.
Well, it could be. It's not really. It's and just a guy turned up and handed over his Nike Air Jordans as a kind of like antique collection piece to get valued.
Yeah.
And there was a bit of a kickoff on Twitter about it. My favourite comment was, trainers on Antiques Roadshow, what next? An old Domino's pizza box?
Yeah, get him.
We've spoken about this a lot with a lot of the clients that we work with, and this idea of collectibles being more than just what I think old school collections are. And it is about cherished items, or maybe it's unique.
It's stuff with a story.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And you know, he's got a pair of trainers that retailed when he bought them at like 100 quid and they're now 850 quid.
Okay,
that's not that much.
It's kind of strange that he took it to Antiques Roadshow when there are so many reselling websites, and like there's already these spaces for him
but
to be doing
this. But
that's
what I think there's a market. I think viewers of Antiques Roadshow probably aren't aware of this market.
No.
Could this be the start of, I don't know, new age?
Do you think he was a plant? Do you think this is the producer saying, we need a younger audience, get Barry and his trainers on?
Probably.
I mean, I kind of like this because the furore that's come up around it is quite funny because a lot of people are obviously very upset to see trainers on Antiques Roadshow. I do like the drama, but I think there is potentially an interesting point in it because particularly as, I guess, technology in particular, but kind of anything moves so quickly now that it probably takes much less time now for something to feel like an antique than it used to in the past. If you look at the first iPod, like it looks like something from a different planet. Like it looks like so old. So I think there's kind of something in that a little bit. So yeah, I'm on board. I like this move for Antiques Roadshow.
It's a bit different. I'm surprised Antiques Roadshow is still going, to be honest.
Well, maybe this is why.
I just wanted to talk about it.
I'm not surprised they're still going at all. Have you watched it recently?
I haven't, no.
It's pretty good.
Apart from the...
I'll tell you what, my favourite part is seeing someone's face when they think they're going to get a massive quote.
Yeah, it's just nothing.
It's like, I mean, thanks for coming. I hope you had a nice day. You said that's fun.
I'm reading one of the headlines and it says, Antiques Roadshow fans gobsmacked by £850 cost for a pair of trainers. To me,
£850...
No, it's not that much.
That's why I think this isn't something that's not new. Obviously the BBC have brought it in to be like, oh, shock factor, but it's not something that we in the industry that we work in is a massive surprise.
But is that because we're not the standard demo for people watching Antiques Roadshow? Whereas my nan got £900 for a pair of trainers. Has the world gone mad? Then she'd probably say something racist.
I think you're right. I think it was a plant. I think they're trying to get a splash out so that people are now like next gen consumers are like,
look at us, we're talking about it.
I've got this promotion, you know, says sunglasses, and I want to take it to the Antiques Roadshow and see how much money I can get.
Did you hear Alicia's theory that it's a promotion for Air, the movie? They thought, let's go onto Antiques Roadshow and try and plug the film.
I think the only thing that's surprising, I guess it's just the idea of antique. It just depends on what your opinion is, and you're just used to seeing like old ass cabinets and stuff from like the 1700s or whatever
from the war.
But I think this one was saying like one of his oldest pairs were from 1992. Yeah. So I guess it's like, is that antique?
That's well old.
Like, yeah. It's well old. Yeah, 92.
Does it count as an antique? And also, do trainers have a place on the show?
Yeah. In general. Sure, like, why not? Yeah.
But I just not wonder, for people who like don't people, like change.
I feel like James the appraisers grandma, wouldn't necessarily know how to value it, though, because I feel like that's probably not their expertise.
That's a point, actually.
I think that's the only thing.
You've got some bloke in a cravat saying, 800? I don't know.
Yeah. I think this, but this is a good point where you could have a really interesting show that features these sort of things. So, like old trainers and even just other sort of collectible, like it's kind of like baseball cards is sort of like the vibe that I'm getting.
But they have that type of thing on Antiques Roadshow already. Yeah, like, but this guy is a trainer collector, so he would have known this is not where you would typically go to buy and sell trainers. So maybe it was a plant, or maybe he's just trying to
be... I think it was a plant, because I can always appreciate some kind of Machiavellian machinations.
I don't know what that meant, but I just nodded
devious
anyway.
Little plans.
I understood that. We find it funny, but again, viewers of Antiques Roadshow probably didn't find it funny or amusing. They probably just got a bit annoyed.
Oh, dear.
Oh, dear. Thanks for that, Lucy. James, what do you think's making it in?
I've done something a little bit unorthodox here, because that Gatorade thing I actually think is probably better placed in Cut Culture, which goes out this week.
Yeah.
So that might be going
switch
in there.
Up.
So to cross promote that, go check out Cut Culture on the High Stakes Films website.
Yeah, it's great.
It's superb. Or the other stuff, don't know. I didn't think my dinosaurs were that great, but then now I think it's probably the best. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see. You'll have to go read it.
And how are people going to see?
ZacAgency.com/cool-SHT.
Thanks, Alicia. Always a pleasure.
Yeah, thank you.
Lucy, hope to have you back soon.
Thank you.
In a different funky jumpsuit.
Thank you, Jack. Do you know what? I'll make sure I do.
I think you should. Yeah. Cool. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye.